Are you tired of watching the same old travel videos on the internet? Well, then check out MikeNoGoZones.com, a travel documentary that's breaking barriers. I go to the places that the media tells you to fear, where no one else dares to go. Baltimore, Opa-locka, south side of Chicago, and more. Go to MikeNoGoZones.com.
I have Tass Mellis for you, sir.
All right. The Tass Man is on. No Dunk, Inc. is the podcast, part of the Athletic family. You can follow him on Twitter like I and so many others do, at Tass Mellis. Let's bring him aboard. Tass, how you doing, baby?
Big O, how you doing? It's been a long time.
Yeah, bro. You corona-free?
no idea. You never know. Right. You never know. I think I'm all right at this point.
Right. Because if we've been like at this thing for almost 3 weeks now and you don't have the symptoms, you kind of feel like, you know what, I might be all right. So I'm like doing exactly the same thing I do every day just to make sure I don't get out of that rhythm so I don't risk anything, right? That's kind of what it is.
You got no choice. It's exactly what you got to do. Otherwise, it's a multiplier. You know, you meet someone, you talk to somebody, it can just get around real quick. So, yeah, you stay in the exact same thing. Luckily, I've kind of been quarantining myself anyways. I've got a little baby at home anyways. It's kind of the same thing for me. I really haven't been changing much.
Yeah, no, me too, actually. My life hasn't changed that much. Although, you know, I do go to a ton of concerts. That's the one thing that has changed. And hell, who knows when I'll get back to a concert with this damn thing. So, you know, I was ripping the commissioner a couple weeks back when he had the idea of playing the games without the fans. And I said a couple weeks back that the only way you can do that is if everybody's the boy in the plastic bubble and that you've got to sequester everybody. So that's kind of what's come to now to light, is that now people realize that the only way they're ever going to get this thing going, at least during this stuff, is if you sequester everybody, coaches, trainers, broadcasters, players, put them somewhere. I know they're talking about Vegas. Jay Williams talked about a boat. Paul Pierce, I don't know what he's smoking. He wants Area 51. I don't know what the hell's going on. Tass, is this really something that can be pulled off? Can you actually get players and everybody to do this, Tass?
I think it can be. It's such a long shot, and I think it's, you know, this is just my preliminary thinking without any inside information. I think it's way down on the list of what they would want. Ideally, they'd be doing it, you know, with fans, but to pull off the whole idea in a sort of a secluded city with minimal skeleton type staff, arena staff, broadcasting, camera people, it's a long shot. It's a real long shot because, like you said, when you're talking about yourself, you would have to have all of those people quarantined for several weeks beforehand.
That's right.
And basically guaranteed some way that they would have to be monitored, that they wouldn't be out in public for several weeks beforehand. Otherwise, the entire operation could get sick very, very quickly. And obviously that would be a huge, huge black mark on the league. And so it just takes one. It really takes one person to meander away from his hotel, even if it's in some sort of city like Las Vegas, and contract the disease, and then everybody's got it. And so this is, I think, of what they want to be done. I think this is way down on the list, this sort of secluded idea. But you're right. I mean, that's almost the only way it could get done with the way things look, because of the way that the U.S. Hasn't had this, you know, shelter in policy mandated throughout the entire U.S. It, you know, it's sort of state to state, and many states aren't even doing it. So it's seemingly day by day, as this continues to keep getting worse and worse, it's less and less likely that we're going to see an NBA season, period, wherever it is. And I don't think it goes to a point where we just see, let's say, like an NBA finals. If it gets to like August and things are, you know, somewhat okay for a couple teams to play, I go that far because I don't think they want to go too deep into the calendar year with the 2019-20 season. I think they would just scrap it and start new.
And let me add another problem to all of this, why it's not realistic by the league also, Tass, because we're watching the UFC now. Dana White is going crazy trying to put 249 together, and it's a skeleton crew. And remember, the law is you can't have more than 10 people. How the hell do you pull off a basketball game if you can't have more than 10 people? It takes 10 just to play the game itself without referees, coaches, and a bench and broadcasters. So, and maybe, you know, the broadcasters can be a mile away up top, so that doesn't matter. But everybody else has got to be within the vicinity. So I don't know how any city's going to approve you to have more than 10 people inside a building on a court. That's the part. And bench, all the guys are sitting next to each other on the bench. So what are you going to do? Are you going to have a bench where the guys are 6 feet apart? How are you going to do this? It just doesn't fly.
Let me jump in. I mean, I know it's crazy that the UFC has even pulled off events before 249 here, and they managed to do it. And, you know, it looked obviously crazy on television without a fan in the stands. Yeah. And, you know, it's different there that it's, you know, one-on-one, but you know, I think you could pull it off, and because you said the law is not, you know, 10 people, is restricted to 10 people, but there's not a law. There hasn't been anything mandated by the federal government. It's just a state to state thing. Right. So you can find, I suppose, like if you wanted to skirt the issue, you could find the state to do it in at this point. But it doesn't make sense. It doesn't, you know, like if you want to be the league that tries to pull this off amidst all the other leagues that aren't trying to pull it off, it looks terrible. And I question why the UFC went as long as they did trying to make these things happen. And they're still continuing to try and make this one particular fight happen. It's a little bonkers to watch from the outside. And it really has to be, I know I said it's not a law and you can try and skirt it, but it would be dumb to do so. And the NBA it doesn't seem like they would try and pull something off like that. I think it would have to be a situation where the country is getting healthier on the whole. And then it just becomes things are beginning to get more normal. And then maybe, like you brought up all the example of the skeleton crew and being on the court, then maybe it could happen. But, you know, the length of an NBA playoffs is generally 2 months, and that would have to be shortened. And the longer we go, the less likely it is to happen, but it could be a shortened version of the playoffs, sometime during the summer. So I don't think it's dead at this point.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that I was thinking about is it depends on how long this thing stretches out. How much does it affect next season? And or is there a chance that we finally get to see the NBA move? You know, even if this drags out a little bit, they can still have some time off and then start in late December, start in Christmas and go into the summer. And I know that the TV companies don't want that in the summer and all of that. But I mean, hell, if your finals are sometime in August, towards the back end, right before football starts, you pretty much have the country there and watching those playoffs. I think you'd get monster ratings. Plus, with the kids at home, they could watch even the late games. They could actually stay up during the summers and you won't lose the kids. I don't know. I just think it would be beneficial if this, the negative part might lead to something positive for the NBA schedule-wise on a permanent basis. Any shot of that?
It's a great question. I think if they were going to try it 1 year to push back the beginning of the season to, like, you know, the idea was even floated before the whole corona started, before the virus was really present in the U.S. By Steve Koonin, one of the Hawks owners. So I think that started the idea. We were talking about it way before March and February on our show on No Dunks, because, you know, just logically, like you said, you kind of get out of football's way, and you're really competing more against baseball rather than more against the NFL. And it's less competition, but I don't think it happens this year. I think if there was a year that they would try it, it would be a year that didn't come with all these complications beforehand. Like there's a lot of complications with, like you said, the television companies, with dealing with the summer next season, with just a lot of people having jobs, you know, changing, moving the calendar for people into the summer, and a lot of things I don't even understand, to be honest. But I think there's a lot of balls in the air on that side. And then you know, if you're piggybacking, if you're compounding it with everything that's happening in the country now, I think it's, let's say all the advertisers and the TV stations are trying to figure out how the heck we pay our people, where we're making our money in July, August, September, October. And then there's this whole new thing that we've got to figure out to deal with our advertisers, to switch up our television lineups, to tell people they're working in June, July, and August. And I'm sure there's another bunch of reasons. I don't see it happening this year. I think it would just be too much for everyone to handle. But that's for somebody with a higher pay grade than me to really wrap their head around.
Follow my man on Twitter at TassMellis. Catch the podcast No Dunk, of course, for The Athletic. They do a great job as always. With the players that you've been able to talk to or contact over the last couple of weeks, how are they about all of this? Are they dying to get the season back, or are they more worried about health and saying, you know what, maybe this is one of those seasons we got to just end right here and move on and turn the chapter? What do you get from players at this point? Because this thing's dragging on, Tass, and I kind of worry about bringing everybody back and injuries that really could come from all their bodies being cold for a couple of months.
Yeah, I think the players are really on top of this issue, and it's a far bigger issue than basketball. And I think the NBA is a pretty progressive league. People aren't just, you know, burying their heads in the sand and thinking about themselves and thinking about their paychecks and thinking about, you know, my basketball legacy at this point. I think all the players, like you saw Steph Curry talk to Dr. Fauci, you know, one of the yeah, leaders in the coronavirus task force. And everybody gets that, you know, we may not play and they've been secluded and they're quarantining themselves. And when it hit home with Rudy Gobert, the Utah Jazz player, contracting the virus and a game being canceled, as it was, you know, I was watching that game. I was ready to work at NBA TV that night, and in Oklahoma City that night, they're sending out all of their acts, all of their musical talent, all their dance crews, like for half an hour, you know, trying to just kill some time as they figured things out. I mean, it was sort of surreal. And I think NBA players are very much in the know as to what the heck is going on in their league. And so that, I mean, everybody I was working with that night was just flabbergasted. Everybody just couldn't wrap their heads around what was going on. So I think NBA players, they got it from the get-go. And I think there are a lot of people paying attention to the news who are paying attention to the news actually in January and February and March when this thing was barreling towards us. I think people got it. And you're right about people getting injured, et cetera. I think, you know, the NBA is really cognizant of giving guys rest, not having back-to-backs. And, you know, you see guys and teams suggest that players sit out all the time because they're really aware that how their bodies are supposed to perform. So I think there would be a good warm-up, a good, you know, quote-unquote training camp before this thing got going. So I don't think, you know, I don't talk to a ton of NBA players, but I think the ones that I have spoken with are just like you and me, really. They're just worried about what the heck is going on with our country and how we get back to normal and how people, you know, sort of that have lost paychecks are trying to figure out where the heck they're getting their next meal from. And a lot of them are donating their money and their time and creating awareness around that. So, you know, kudos to a lot of those dudes, and that's what they're worried about. The Big O. I don't think they really care about if they're getting paid on April the 15th all that much. I think they're just ready to they're quarantining. They're vocal about what the heck is going on and making sure that we're all taking care of ourselves for at least a few months. I mean, it's not the end of the world if they don't get out there in the first round of the playoffs. They've got they understand that it is a lot bigger in basketball.
No doubt. Tass Mellis joining us. Tass, we get a lot of entertainment from social media, and you obviously got a little action on social media this week, went a little viral, and we talked about it on the show a couple days ago. It was a funny story with your program that you thought it was a Vince Carter signature, and it was an Alvin Williams signature. So first of all, tell everybody the story, how it all happened, and how Vince Carter kind of straightened you out and maybe disappointed you a little bit too.
Well, I mean, I was a teenager way back in 1998. I went to this fundraiser for Marfan syndrome, which is a disease that a lot of athletes have, actually, because it affects tall people, and so it's affected basketball people. But I mean, that was besides the point. They got a Raptors program that was signed by Vince Carter, or at least I thought it was. At least I thought it was signed by Vince Carter. They got it donated to them. And so I put up a bid in a silent auction. It started at $125, put my $125 bid down, and nobody else bid anything. Maybe they knew something I didn't. There was no certificate of authenticity. I asked for it, Big O. I was a 17-year-old back then, but I was, in the card collecting game. I understood that things could be fake, but I thought it was a Vince Carter signature. Anyways, I took it home, really, and this past week, The Athletic was just generating some social media content, and they just said, tweet a photo of some random sports memorabilia that you have. So I tweeted that photo, and then it was like 9 hours later, Vince Carter retweeted and said, hate to break it to you, but that ain't my signature. And he said, it's probably Alvin Williams' signature, a teammate back his, a great Raptor. Won a playoff series against the Knicks back in 2001. But then, actually, you said it was Alvin Williams. It wasn't his. Alvin Williams actually saw it, retweeted, and said, nope, that ain't mine either. It's actually our other teammate, John Wallace, from back then. So I went from Vince Carter to Alvin Williams to John Wallace.
John was Syracuse? John Wallace?
Yeah, okay. Syracuse, yep.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. That was a good season for him. He averaged 14 points a game back then. That was his career high in the NBA. He played for the Knicks a little bit, but
I remember.
It was bonkers, man. It was bonkers. Yeah, it was pretty funny. I think I got my $125 worth.
Yeah, yeah. So, but what are you going to do with it now? That's the question. are you taking care of it now like you used to, or did you just throw it on some pile now?
Well, I got to be honest. It was just on a pile beforehand, too. I mean, it wasn't. I wasn't doing anything with it. It was collecting dust for 20 years. It was just sitting there. It was probably. It was definitely the most I ever paid for a signature. I'll tell you that. But I got to get Vince to sign it now.
Right.
I'm down here in Atlanta. We do our show down here in Atlanta. He's come on our show before. He's just spent his last season in the NBA here. And so I got to hit him up. I think I got to talk to him about it too. I mean, we got to get to the bottom of this.
Well, no, the best part about this, Tass, is now the magazine has a story to it. That's the best. See, that's the thing about this. And you know what? You added even more spice to it. If you now get Vince Carter to sign it, it's like, okay, what I paid for, all these years ago, now I get my money's worth and more, because now I get Vince Carter's signature, and now I've got like three other NBA players that are all tied to this thing. There's a story to it. It's actually worth more than $125 now.
It's gained value. Or maybe I'm just making this whole thing up.
Ah.
Maybe I just signed it myself. No, I'm just kidding.
You know what you got to do?
Oh, good,
You got to get a picture of the your magazine and the retweet of Vince Carter, and then have him sign that also.
Yeah.
And then frame both.
That's a good call.
But frame both. The magazine and that next to it. That way when people ask, that's it, dude. It's an entire story that's tied to it. It's freaking classic. You gotta love it, man.
And then I gotta get you to sign it because you came up with that idea.
Well, no, it's just I don't know about the idea, but I mean, it's just I thought it was hilarious, man.
No,
that was great.
And, no, it's a good call.
And by the way, tell folks
because they may not watch the show like I have religiously for so long, that you're a monster Raptors guy. I mean, that's like your team, you know, so this means a lot to you.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Toronto. You know, I grew up a baseball fan and a hockey fan, and then the Raptors came to town in 1995 when I was a teenager, and so I jumped on board with that big purple dinosaur they're playing in a baseball stadium. But I got attached to it right away, but I really got attached to it when Vince Carter became a Raptor. He was transcendent, man. Yeah. Those first few years, he was absolutely incredible. He made me and buddies pony up and pay for some season seats when we were in college. So that was a time he really sucked me in. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm not 100% certain that Toronto Raptors would exist without Vince Carter and the way he attracted a new owner to that city and to that franchise. And so things, he really turned that franchise around. And, you know, I had a season seats for a lot of dark years, a lot of bad years, and then moved down to Atlanta to do our TV show. And then the Raptors got good. And it was just my luck. They go on and they win the championship. And it was incredible. They the entire country was going crazy, setting up viewing parties in every single big city and small city throughout the country. It was Canada's championship. So it took a long time to happen, 24 years for a championship. And I know a lot of other cities have been starved for far longer than that, but it was a roller coaster. And so, yeah, VC kind of started it off a long, long time ago. He wasn't able to achieve a lot of things, you know, team-wise in the NBA like people thought he would. A lot of people thought, you know, he came out of North Carolina and people saw the athleticism. So initially they think, whoa, this guy could be MJ, which is, you know, a little bonkers looking back. But, I mean, he had the athleticism and so people thought he could be, you know, the best in the NBA. It didn't happen that way, but he's a special guy. The guy's still playing at 43 years old. So, yeah, it means a lot as a young fan growing up. And so I'm happy for him in general and happy I got a story now for that program.
Oh, yeah, big time. Tass, before I let you go, we're all kind of hoping down here that the season ends because the Heat kind of shocked the world and they kind of outplayed what everybody thought and a whole bunch of young guys, you know, stepped up in a big-time way. Just out of curiosity, from afar, what's your thoughts of our Heaters here kind of turning things around a little bit?
I think they're one of the best stories of the season and always behind my Raptors. The Raptors are a great story of the season. I actually was looking forward to them getting into the playoffs, you know, in that 4-5 spot if they're going to play the Pacers. I think even let's say they do go back, I think they got a good shot against Pacers, especially because Victor Oladipo hasn't been able to really find himself quite yet. And this gap is really going to hurt him. So I think that he'd have a great shot to go up and probably play the Bucks in the second round. And you know, because you never know exactly what's going to happen with this time off. So I think there's a decent shot that they could at least shake the Bucks. I mean, they've got all those defenders to guard Giannis and Bam and Jimmy Butler and Andre Iguodala. I think this hurts this time off probably hurts Andre Iguodala because he wasn't in his flow. But right. All in all, I was really, 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 really impressed with the way that they integrated all those, you know, second round picks and non-drafted guys. I mean, it is a lot like the Toronto Raptors winning the championship last year and how they, you know, Fred VanVleet undrafted. Guys, Pascal Siakam way down in the first round, a lot of guys that weren't expected to be great and have found a role in the NBA and Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn and Chris Silva and on and on. So it's a great story. It's a great story. It's obviously a great, great, great franchise. And it's really impressive. And there is a lot of likeness to the way the Raps did it and the way they connected their G League team and their minor league team and their player development to it. So, man, I was looking forward to their first season. I wonder, it was first playoffs, I should say, altogether. And I wonder if it hurts just not having that, if it doesn't end up being a, if there doesn't end up being a season, if that really hurts them in their development.
It does.
To run, yeah.
No, no, it does, because they don't get the playoff experience, Tass. You know that. For these young guys,
yep.
It's not a, it doesn't hurt Jimmy Butler. It doesn't affect his ass whatsoever. But Bam and Tyler and all these cats and Duncan Robinson, they need that trip through the playoffs to experience it, to feel the pressure, all of that, so they can have that thing to build on, you know, because that's what we've watched from Bam every year. We've watched Bam improve every year to the point that he's now an all-star. It's the same thing. These guys don't get that experience. That'll be crushing for them, because it'll take them an entire season again to get to that point, to go get that experience in the playoffs.
Yeah, and the thing with Jimmy Butler is he's not a young,
no,
you know, 30-year-old guy, whatever he is. I think he's 31. I think you got to take advantage of every season he has here as a like, you know, a number one guy. Yeah, he's still 30, but you know, the way they handled him in Chicago, he could use
Tass, go ahead and say it. He's got the Tom Thibodeau burned out legs. I'll do it for you, baby. I'll do it for you. I know.
Thanks, man.
I know. That's, hey, listen, I said when they acquired him that this acquisition is not going to be a good acquisition if they don't add a star in his first 2 years. And Riley has one more year, because if you wait to 2021 and 2022 to do that, you're going to have problems, because that, I don't think that's going to be a good deal with Jimmy in years 3 and 4, because I think he's going to really show, you know, his wares, unfortunately. So to me, it was really, that's why these young guys exploding is really, really a bonus for them. Because that they nobody expected that. And you really need that in a little bit to mask what Jimmy can't do anymore. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Jimmy's been holding it for the playoffs a little bit as well, holding back a little bit for the playoffs, because he was incredible against the Raptors last year with the Sixers. I mean, he was their go-to guy. But yeah, he could use one more guy, and you know, Pat Riley's always ready to make that happen, even though they've sort of locked up a lot of their money the next couple years with this Iguodala deal and everybody they've added. He can still find a way. That's Pat Riley. So. Yeah, you're right. It would be nice to get somebody in the near future for Jimmy and Bam, who's been incredible.
Follow him on Twitter. He's awesome, at Tass Mellis. Tass, you are a stud, my brother. Thank you for taking some time and talking a little b-ball. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Big O. I appreciate it, too.
You got it, baby. Be good. There you go. The great Tass Mellis. Check out the show, No Dunk, Inc. That's the podcast, part of the Athletic family. Let's take a break. Mike Ferolino, baby, no go zones. Mike, no go zones, will join us on the other side.
You know what this story reminds me of? Like the magazine, like you were pointing out. Remember Michael Jordan and the kid getting the $5 from him on the bet?
Oh,
and him signing?
Yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah.
It's got like a life of its own.
Yeah. Now it's actually worth something.